we can make application, even in a democratic society, that though we aren't ruled by an emperor, we still have responsibility. Responsibility to pray, responsibility to submit, responsibility to good citizenship, responsibility to obey laws. That those are the responsibilities of being a Christian citizen. And so, too, in this, I think we can see parallels between the employer and the employee relationship. His focus is on the servant, or in our context, the employee.
It's an employer-employee relationship that we're focusing on today as we continue our little mini-series called Gospel-Centered Relationships here in Colossians chapter 3, verses 22 through chapter 4 and verse 1. Welcome to today's broadcast. This is Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne, the ministry of San Gabriel Community Church. And today, as promised, we are back in Colossians chapter 3, verses 22 through 41. And again, this is this gospel-centered relationship, family and working outward towards those in friendship relationships. For the details, here's Pastor Steve.
There is a dangerous thing that we can do in life as believers. A few weeks ago, I used the word compartmentalize, believing that we can take our spiritual life and separate it from the rest of life. A separation, sometimes it's spoken of as being a separation between the sacred and the secular. That here's the sacred part of life and here's the secular part of life, and that there's no congruity between those things. They don't mesh, they don't come together. Paul so powerfully makes the point in Colossians that your theology must impact all of your life. I think one of the great shortcomings of books on spiritual disciplines and the spiritual life in the last 50 years or more is the fact that very few of them seem to deal with the workplace. And the reality is, for most of us, most of our time is spent in work. Most of our time is spent in the quote-unquote secular workplace, the secular environment. And yet you read books on the Christian life. When's the last time you picked up a book in the Christian life and it spoke of the biggest chunk of your week? It speaks of Christian service. It speaks of your responsibility in the church. It speaks of the discipline of prayer and giving and serving and of praying and fasting. And those are good things, and those are biblical things, but it ignores the greatest chunk of time you spend in your week. Now, is that because God is unconcerned with those things? Is God unconcerned with Monday to Friday? Just give me the weekends, you know, rest and worship, and just fight through the rest of that time because we're going to come back together on Sunday for what's really important. I think that is the farthest thing from what God intends to take place in our lives because of the gospel. A man named A.T. Robertson said this. He said, real Christianity is both a doctrine and a life. Mere belief is dead without life is proof. Real spiritual life is impossible without vital contact with God and Christ. And our dealings with others become the final proof of our real connection with Christ. In other words, he says what Paul says here, you can claim the supremacy of Christ, the greatness of Christ in all of the universe, and unless that impacts your marriages, I don't believe you believe in the supremacy of Christ. You can claim the greatness of Christ, and unless that impacts the way you deal with your children, and the way you deal with your boss, and the way you deal with your employees, the way you deal with one another in the church, I don't think you really understand the supremacy of Christ. It's fascinating to read studies. I looked at just a couple this past week about production in the workplace, or more specifically, the loss of production in the workplace. And how people live for the weekends. Thank God it's Friday, right? We fight through the drudgery of Monday through Friday just to get to the weekend. That's our view of work. That's the normal view of work, is just to fight through, just to get through, right? And we make it through 2 days, and it's Wednesday, okay, it's hump day. If I can just get over this, and then it's Thursday, and then, okay, Friday is tolerable. Now I've got the weekend. And that's our life, week after week, fighting through the drudgery of work just to get to the weekends. Is that a Christian perspective on work, on life? Now that we've been set apart for Christ, now that we've been redeemed by the gospel, is it his intent, is it God's intent that we just view the secular as something to fight through for the sake of the spiritual? Paul has been providing a description in Colossians 3 of the normal Christian life, who the Christian is in relationship to Christ, who the Christian is in relationship to the local church, who the Christian is in relationship to his family, husbands and wives, fathers, parents and children, and now relationship between masters and servants. And his point is this: the gospel is intended to transform lives. It is intended to transform human relationships. If the gospel is real in our hearts, if it's truly taken place in our hearts, then it moves from these most intimate human relationships outward into other relationships we have with other people. And we see him do in these verses that we'll look at this morning the same thing he's done, the same pattern, where he asserts the lordship of Christ in every aspect of life. Christ is Lord over everything. And he addresses the subordinate party, inferior party, the one that's to be obedient, he addresses them directly. That's unique in this. And he also addresses both parties, making the point that both have responsibility. He doesn't just tell the children, listen, obey. He says, no, parents, you have responsibilities. He doesn't just address the servants and say, obey. He says to the masters, you have responsibility in this as well. These people, these slaves, these servants are not robots, they're not animals, they're not property. He sees them as morally independent people who have responsibility before God. Now, before we can understand the principles that are put before us in these verses about slaves and masters, we need to understand a little bit of Paul's context. Every time we come to a passage, there's a need. We stand here, and first century Judaism is here, and we've got to figure out a way to cross that bridge because it's a different culture. And when he talks about marriages, we still need to cross the bridge because marriages were different then, but we have a one-to-one ratio when he talks about husbands and wives. Yes, I'm a husband, this is a wife, yes, I can make that connection. So the bridge is shorter. When he talks about slaves and masters, there's a huge gap. And there is no, I want you to hear this, there is no, in my opinion, one-to-one ratio in our culture to this text. We're going to make application of this text principally to the workplace, but it is very different from slaves and masters in the first century. Now, one of the condemnations that Paul receives is, why, Paul, don't you condemn slavery? Why doesn't Paul come out and say, this is the greatest evil in the Roman Empire, let's end it. Let's, as Christians, end and abolish slavery. Why doesn't he do that? Because in Colossians 3, his intent is to speak to the responsibility that each individual Christian has in life. And here's the fact, that slavery in the Roman Empire was a fact of life. It is estimated that maybe 50 or 60 million people were slaves in the Roman Empire. Up to 50% of the population of Rome were slaves. Why? Because Rome was busy doing something. They were busy conquering the world. And when you conquer a people, you can't just come into the country, conquer them, and then move on. You have to make them in some way subject to you or your rule will fail. And so that's what they did. They enslaved group after group after group, people after people after people. And so these slaves became a part of Roman society, and they worked for the Romans. But make no mistake, they were slaves. They were seen as less than the Romans. They were seen as property. They were abused in many cases. But these people were also professionals and had great responsibility. These were doctors that had been conquered, that worked as doctors in the Roman Empire. These were teachers that would then teach the Roman children. These were financiers that would take care of the finances in Roman homes. These were people given the responsibility to care for and even in cases discipline the children. And they were people put in a place where they had the potential to do great damage to their masters. And so Paul addresses this group not with the intent of overthrowing a segment of society or an institution within Roman society, but saying to a church, listen, this is the reality of where we live in a society that has slaves and masters. If you're a slave, here's your responsibility as a Christian. If you're a master, here's your responsibility as a Christian. And we'll come back to this at the end of why he approaches it in this way. One of the great difficulties I think we have as Americans when we read a passage such as this is that our context for slavery is abhorrent. And we want to put that into the text. And we must understand this is a Roman context. It's not an American context. And the slavery was significantly different. So he speaks here to Christians and how they need to behave in the society that they find themselves in. And slavery was a part of the fabric of that society. And this is what it means, he says, as a slave, as a master, to live a gospel-centered life in the circumstances you find yourself in. So now what do we do with this text? Well, certainly we're going to see an argument I would make akin to Romans 13. In Romans 13, Paul calls us to submit to government. Who was the leader when Paul writes those words? Nero. As bad as you think whatever political party is, it's not as bad as Nero, okay? No one's going to come in this morning and pull us away out of our service and light their garden with our bodies. That's not going to happen this morning. And yet Paul says, I'm not calling you to overthrow the tyranny of Rome. I'm saying you live here. This is your leader. And as evil as he is and as tyrannical as he is and as against the gospel as he is, this is how you are to live under that leadership. And so we can make application, even in a democratic society, that though we don't aren't ruled by Nero, by an emperor, we still have responsibility. Responsibility to pray, responsibility to submit, responsibility to good citizenship, responsibility to obey laws, responsibility to participate in the process, that those are the responsibilities of being a Christian citizen. And so, too, in this, I think we can see parallels between the employer and the employee relationship. His focus is on the servant, or in our context, the employee. What should characterize a Christian employee? What are the characteristics? The first is this, obedience. Let's look at the text, and then we'll look at this point together. Starting in verse 22, slaves or servants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters. Not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your slaves justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. The first characteristic of a Christian employee, of an employee whose life has been transformed by the gospel, is obedience. He calls these slaves living in the home of their masters to be obedient. Let me just ask you that question as we start. Are you obedient as an employee? Or does the level of your obedience, your compliance, waver depending on what you're asked to do? When my boss asks me to do something I like, I am all in. But when they ask me to do something I'm not that excited about, I'm less than obedient. Paul doesn't encourage revolt. He demands obedience. He doesn't challenge the system. He beats this drum over and over again. The gospel must impact the way you live. and the path to change society, the path to change structures, is through the reform of individual hearts. And we'll see that as we move through. This obedience, he says, is to extend to all things. Obey in everything. Just like the children before them, this obedience extends to all things. No matter what task you're given, no matter what your boss calls you to do, be obedient. Now, the same caveat applies here that we spoke of with children. Certainly, this is not a command to violate the will of God, to violate the law of God. If your employer is asking you to do something illegal, this is not a call to do it. But in the course of everyday life, setting aside that great exception, whether or not it violates biblical truth, just do what you're told. Be obedient in everything. Be obedient when it's a task you love to do. Be obedient when it just seems menial and below you. Just do it. Just be obedient and responsive to your boss. So ask yourself that question. Be honest in your own heart this morning. Are you an obedient employee? Are you obedient in the mundane things? Are you joyfully obedient in those things? Does obedience mark and characterize your employment before your boss? Be obedient. It's simple and yet so difficult to do. So hard to truly be obedient in all things. But Paul calls us to that. Secondly, is our employment marked by obedience? Secondly, is it marked by integrity? Slaves, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers. Okay? This, I think, characterizes most of the workforce that I'm familiar with. I mean, not at our church, but outside. The workforces that I've been part of, that I've seen, people are working for eye service, they're working as people pleasers. These words characterize reluctant obedience. Obedience because you're being watched. Obedience that is external and superficial, but full of hypocrisy, lacking sincerity, lacking wholehearted service. Would your work evaluation say works well when under constant supervision? Is that what required for you to be a wholehearted worker? When the boss is not watching and there's no possibility of promotion, what characterizes your work? When you think no one is around and no one knows what's happening, what's your work ethic? Most, it seems, do whatever is necessary to get the most possible favor or to avoid punishment and to make the system work for them. Is that not the common approach to work? How can this system best serve me? How can I get the most from this? How can I advance in this? Paul says, as a believer, you should be servants who are marked by integrity. You're not motivated by the fear of a human boss. It is a great challenge to be in an environment where everybody is a clock watcher and where everybody seems too important for the menial task. And he says the Christian lifestyle should be different. So ask yourself this question. Be honest again in your own heart about it. Do you work harder when the boss is watching? Do you work harder when there's possibility of promotion? I know it offends people every time, so, you know, this caveat, forgive me, I was a telemarketer, okay? But when I worked in telemarketing, the LA Times, the very first day at work, I was being taught the ropes of how to be lazy, day one. So day one, this is what happens. We're all sitting there in a room, and we all got a desk in front of us and a phone, push-button phone, and a list of numbers. And they tell you in training, you need to call 100 numbers an hour. That's your goal, okay? And so you're sitting there, you got to dial. You got to be on it because a lot of those are bad numbers, right? And then a lot of people want to yell at you and then you try to sell one paper to those 100 people. So there I am about halfway through my first shift. The manager leaves the office and it was like collectively you heard 30 clicks. And I thought like there was a fire drill or something. I mean, literally, I'm holding my phone, I'm looking around going, what's on? They're like, manager's gone. I'm like, what? Like, this time of night, they smoke. We know how long they'll be. And they knew exactly, this is how long it took them to smoke their cigarette. They'd come back in, they'd hear them come down the hallway, all the phones came back up. You would learn, because it's hard to sit there for hours and dial those numbers. They would take the cord, and they show me how to do it. First night, just pull the cord halfway out, and then you can pretend to talk on the phone. And they showed me a series of things to do to avoid work while being paid to work. Now, here's my guess. Every single one of your jobs have those kinds of things. And you know what they are. It seems to be a part of every work environment. How can we skirt the system? How can we avoid doing as much work as we have to do when the boss is not around? Interestingly enough, after several years, the LA Times spent millions of dollars to change their entire structure so that every employee was being monitored 100% of the time and all your phone numbers came through a computer and you had no control. It ruined the job. He then gives the positive side of this truth. You don't function as one who looks for his eye service as a people pleaser, but with sincerity of heart. This is the opposite of working to please men. You work with a sincerity of heart. You don't work for the sake of promotion. You work hard for the Lord. You work hard not because you fear the boss, but because you fear God. You work out of reverence for the Lord. You work with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Let's ask ourselves again, do you work in the fear of the Lord? Is that what motivates you as work? To say, I am working for the Lord. I am working in the fear of the Lord. Look at verse 23. He doesn't let us make any excuses. He doesn't find any exceptions, any outs. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Whatever you do, Christian, in everything, it's to be done in the name of the Lord. In this case, Christian slaves must work for their earthly masters in a way that pleases their heavenly master. He's calling these slaves to this church. Yes, you're going to leave this church gathering, and you're going to go back to a place of employment where it's not really employment, where you're mistreated, where you're a slave, where you're owned, where you're seen as property. But when you work for that earthly master, work in a way that you understand you're working for your heavenly master. When you work for the earthly Lord, remember you're working for the heavenly Lord. Peter says a similar thing when he calls us to endure being mindful of God in our work, in our service. We're to work for an audience of one. All work is to be service and not performance. Performance, that's being a people pleaser. When we see work as performance, we see it as something that we do for the sake of an audience. When we work as servants, we work and it's service, then we're working for one. We're working for the King, for an audience of one.
You're listening to Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne from San Gabriel Community Church. If you have questions or comments about the broadcast, maybe you have a prayer request, please reach out to us. We'd love to help out any way that we can. You can reach out to us at 626-656-1000 or stop by our website and drop us an email, sangabrielcommunity.org. If you're looking to join us for worship, we meet at 9 a.m., Sunday school at 10:45, and directions and information, again, can be found at sangabrielcommunity.org or by simply calling 626-656-1000. By the way, as you stop by our website, you'll find an archive of past sermons available to listen to, information about us, who we are, what we believe, and why. Pastor Steve's blog is available from our website as well, and information about San Gabriel Christian School. Please stop by sangabrielcommunity.org or call 626-656-1000. Please remember, as you contact us, this is a listener-supported ministry. As you link arms with us prayerfully and financially, we are able to continue the ministry here in the greater Los Angeles area. Please consider that as you contact us, won't you? Thank you so much for spending time with us today. We look forward to seeing you next week at this same time for another broadcast of Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne. Growing in Grace is the ministry of San Gabriel Community Church.